Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today, we're talking about spring cleaning your life.
Joel.
Sup?
What's up, man? So before we get started on our topic today, I want to tell you, I'm keeping it a secret. Because I wanted to tell you once we hit record.
Yeah, you're bursting at the seams about some deal you got and I want to know.
All right, so listen. Last night, I'm sitting there on Facebook, kind of catching up, seeing what's going on out there in the world. And I see a buddy of mine. He's a photographer friend who also likes scotch, which is nice. And
because we're not only beer drinkers. We like some scotch on occasion.
Yeah.
You in particular.
Oh, man, yeah. I enjoy, in particular, a nice smoky peaty scotch. Anyway, his wife posted a picture of him with a case of one of my favorite scotches, Talisker.
Oh, yeah, you love that
and
one.
And not only Talisker, but it's a special version of it, I guess. It's called Talisker Storm. And this is one that I've had before, and it's really good. So I was like, you got to be kidding me. Why are they picking up a case of this stuff? They picked it up at the liquor store right up the street from us,
uh-huh.
On the corner there, at under $30 a bottle.
You had to buy a case, or did they decide it's under $30 a bottle? I'm buying.
Yeah,
a case.
Basically, it's like this is such a good deal that you need to get that much.
I'm loading up to get enough Talisker that'll last me like the next 12 years.
Yeah, or you know, next six. But this is a scotch that goes anywhere between like 60 and 50. I don't know about 60, like 50 to 70 bucks maybe though.
Okay,
and it was sitting there, you know, per bottle, listed at 20 something, 29, you know, $29.99 or whatever. And so it was like 10, almost 10:30 at night, and Kate was out. But as soon as she got home, I was like, oh, by the way, I got to go.
You put your pants on.
Yeah. My pants were still on. I wasn't ready for bed yet.
Hopped in the car.
And drove up there and bought me a case, man. Yeah. When you see a deal, you pounce.
It's true. And that's the great thing. Like, you know, when you've saved money and the deal comes along and you're like, this is my jam, that's when you make the move.
Yeah. It was such a good deal.
So now basically you need me to come over a lot more and help you drink the scotch. And do we actually need to change this podcast into being a scotch drinking podcast? Or
I don't know. We could do a maybe like 1 week we might do a little scotch pour instead of beer.
All right. Or do a little nightcap at the end.
You know what? We are poor, not poor. It doesn't say that we're pouring a beer.
Exactly.
Oh, man. We left the doors open.
Those people, they'll never be the wiser.
Oh, man. You know, something else I think I was influenced too by my buddy. He just sent me a picture of his beer cellar. And he had just like bottles and bottles of stuff too. And I think that was sort of on my mind. And I thought, you know what? Scotch is definitely something that never goes bad.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, if Tyler's got a shelf full of a bunch of Dogfish Head Worldwide Stouts, maybe I can have some scotch.
And how did your wife feel about you purchasing a case of scotch?
She...
Supportive or no?
She was supportive.
Okay.
Yeah, she wasn't sure how much I should get because she was like, well, that's just stuff, you know, that's up to you to decide, but...
Because in the budget, that's your money, so it's like
exactly.
Whatever.
Well, yeah. So in the end, she's just like, you know, it's up to you. And the way I was thinking about it, though, is that I might give one of those bottles away as like a gift.
Yep.
You know? Yeah, my brother-in-law's got a birthday coming up, and so we were kind of thinking, I was like, you know what? I think he might like to have a bottle of this. And
he's going to be like, oh, Matt's a big spender.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Makes me look good. He's got himself an awesome scotch sitting there. And so once we do that, I get to just transfer it from our giving category back over to credit my account.
Nice. Super, I like it.
Super nerdy.
Well, dude, I'm all about scoring a deal.
Yeah.
And a deal on booze is even better. That's
yes.
Like the best kind of deal you can come upon. All right. I wanted to tell you real quick. I read this article today and I thought it was fascinating because I'd never thought about this before. You and I were both into real estate.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear about that, listeners. You can go back a few episodes and listen to our rental property basics show where Matt and I are kind of amateur landlords and super into it. But I'd never thought about this. Apparently, people that are selling their homes are using their smart cameras and their Nest thermostats and their listening devices in order to kind of get some inside information. They're kind of spying on potential home buyers and their agents to kind of figure out what people are saying about the
snap.
Home. Isn't that amazing?
Like, are they listening to them talk
yeah.
and stuff? Okay.
So let me read just this couple lines from the article. It says, as right. homes become smarter, real estate agents and home buyers are increasingly finding there's an extra set of eyes and ears on them as they tour properties for sale. Realtors describe everything from old-fashioned security cameras to newer contraptions like Nest thermostats tracking their conversations and actions. Fascinating, right? There's all sorts of ways. Like, let's say you're walking through a house and you're talking to your agent and you're like, I'm in love. This is the greatest house I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. And I'm willing to spend this much, even though it's listed at this much.
Exactly. Right. And the seller's like, awesome. That's an upper hand in the negotiations. Hmm. They put in a lowball offer and I just say, no, I'm sticking to my price because I know how much they like it.
Right.
And that's...
So as a potential seller, I'm like totally on board with that because I'm kind of sneaky.
Yeah, you are. But as a buyer, it's messed
up. Yeah, but if I put myself in the buyer's shoes, it's tough. What do you think?
I don't think it's cool. And I think if I were a buyer and I found out that that happened, I would certainly feel like I was tricked.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to do that to somebody. I mean, I understand the desire for that, but it seems unfair. And so I think that should probably be off the table using Nest cams and whatever, like all these different nanny cams, all these other things in order to spy on people essentially walking through your house.
Right. Well, it's not. Yeah, it's less spying. I don't know. Maybe it is spying.
It's definitely eavesdropping at minimum.
But I feel like these technologies are so ubiquitous now that you kind of have to assume that, right?
Sure.
Especially, I mean, you come into a house and they've got the smart doorbell and you see other sort of smart home appliances and you got to think, all right, you know, there might be some of that going on here.
Yeah. I think the biggest takeaway is for anybody who's potentially buying a house and walking through with their agent or a friend or something like that, be really careful what you're saying, because there's a chance that, you know, they might not even be doing it on purpose, but they might, you know, they might be in the next room and hear you. So just be careful about what you're saying. Wait till you're talking price and how much you actually love the property until you're off the premises.
Yeah. Or wait till you get in your car. Don't even wait on the front step or anything like that. I mean, that's how we were. Anytime, like when we first bought our house, Kate and I feel like we were always super tight-lipped, you know, like zip it.
Yeah, feel free to point out the minor flaws in a place or something like that. But like, you know, don't talk about how it's perfect for you and your family until you're out the door with your agent on somewhere else to talk about, you know, that potential.
I'm so torn though, because one part of me wants to think, oh no, that's just part of the game now. It's just part of listing a home. But the other part of me thinks that is pretty messed up, you know?
I think I'm just fascinated that it's a thing. It's like, oh, well, I guess that makes complete sense that's a thing now. But
I long for the days when you had to like eavesdrop in person, Joel, if you wanted to listen to what your potential buyers were saying about your house. Actually, so that totally reminds me of a story. Some friends of ours, they went across to their neighbor's house, like across the street or maybe like catty corner while an agent was showing their house. So, you know, they had to get out of there while the agent was showing their house. And so they're sitting there on the front porch, though, like trying to play it super cool. And they notice that they can't get into the house. the realtor couldn't get the key thing to work. And he was like, should we like text them or like call them so they can like get inside the house? And she's like, no, like they're going to know that we can see them if you like say something about not being able to get in the house.
So it's like old school eavesdropping.
Yeah. Gone are those days.
Yep. Now it's newfangled and there's all sorts of ways that you can spy on people. So don't start lauding the house, you know, and singing its praises while you're walking around inside of it, because, you know, the homeowner could just old school hear you or be recording you on one of their cameras. So, yeah, beware.
So our topic today is going to be spring cleaning your life. And specifically, we're not talking about cleaning your house of dirt. We're going to be talking about getting rid of junk, decluttering your house and kind of making a buck.
Yeah, making a buck on the side while you're doing it, because this is the time of year that people are tossing things, wanting to clear up the clutter, wanting their house to be fresh. And hopefully this episode will help you kind of figure some of those things out and make the most for some of your possessions that you're not just tossing them away, throwing them in a landfill, but that you're actually able to make a little bit of money and bring some sanity back in your life by clearing things out. But first, real quick, onto the beer. Matt, today you picked this one up, Cascade Brewing Blueberry Ale. Tell me about it.
Yeah, Joel, this is a 2015 Cascade Blueberry Ale. These guys are out of Portland, Oregon. And right here on the bottle, it says this Northwest style sour ale. It's a blend of wheat and blonde ales aged in oak barrels for up to 12 months with fresh blueberries. Yeah, Joel. So one of the reasons I think I love these guys specifically is that they're making, at least traditionally, they've made their sours from wheat and blonde ales. And that is one of the things I love about sours is are the brighter ones.
It's cork and caged, which means there's a fancy cork inside that we gotta pop. So
Joel's pouring that right now. It's pouring a reddish purple. So it's obviously got the color from the blueberries. I can smell that sour, man.
And I can smell what the rock is cooking. You jabroni.
So this smells exactly the way I remember. I haven't sipped it yet, but I can smell that oak. It smells bright.
Dude, it hits you like right on the sides of your cheeks and just you start salivating instantly. It's like a blueberry sweet tart almost. Oh, man. It's really, really good.
This is still one of my favorites.
And I completely agree with you. I would recommend Cascade to anybody.
Specifically if you're looking at sours.
Right? Yeah, I would recommend Cascade to anybody who likes sours. We've had, over the years, Matt, you and I have shared some really good ones from them. And I do say shared because this is in a 750 milliliter bottle. So you're really talking about a great bottle to share with somebody. Drink that on your own at your own peril.
So if you happen to be able to get your hands on one of those, snatch it up.
With something like this, you can drink it 3 years from now. You can just have it on your shelf, look at it, and smile every time you see it, and then decide randomly one day to stick it in the fridge so you can crack it open, you know, the following night.
If only I could see you, you know, look at your beers and smile.
I think my wife gets jealous.
I was going to say, she's like, yeah.
What are you doing, honey? Just smiling at my beers. Just
standing there looking at your beers, smiling.
Just looking at my malt hop barley children. All right, on to the topic at hand, Matt. We're talking about spring cleaning your life, how to get rid of some of the stuff that you have in your house that you don't need, and how to make a quick buck from it while at the same time decluttering and actually improving your life. And the first thing that we need to note, almost all of us, we have too much stuff in our homes. And it begins to take up space, not only physically, but in our minds. And so I know every time that I go through a period of decluttering, a time of decluttering, it is like therapeutic for not only my pocketbook and my house and the space there, but for my mind as well.
Yeah. Doesn't it just feel good when like, you know, that there's something that's kind of been sitting there piled up, like with a bunch of other junk, and you can finally clear it out. Like you said, I feel like that sort of mental or emotional part of it is almost even better than just clearing out the space in your house, because it's easy to throw stuff in the attic or kind of toss it down in the crawl space, you know, or the basement and just kind of never see it again.
or pull one of those, like, you know, what like a kid, I don't know, I'm thinking like Bart Simpson, probably, you know, stuffing everything in a closet and then you like literally shut the closet door so that like things don't like fall out on you.
You have like a closet like that? A closet that things just go to disappear basically?
Not anymore, but you know, I think we have had that at times. And so every time you do this too, or you clear out one room or you clear out, you know, let's say your wardrobe or something like that, man, you kind of get jonesing to move on to the next thing. And so recently, Emily and I did kind of have like a mini purging, and we got rid of just kind of a few things, and we were kind of using the local Facebook yard sale site to get rid of some stuff. It was really nice, man. Like, it just felt like we could walk around our own room a little bit better and the house in general. And it just, man, it feels good to, you know, make a couple $100 and get rid of stuff at the same time that you will never miss.
And not to mention, it's just less stuff to clean, right? More stuff you kind of have out that you have to like dust. I mean, just lose all that.
So I guess the question that we have to probably answer that people are wondering right off the bat is, are we minimalists? Because that's kind of been a trend that we've seen, you know, across the internet. Like, people like to claim that they're minimalists and like to try to inspire other people to live in that way. And we are not minimalists. And I don't think it's a bad thing to try to strive for that if you feel like that's best for your life. But it's also, especially with kids and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
It's something that we're not going to strive for at this point in time.
Yeah. With kids, it's especially hard having kids at different ages, because there's stuff you want to keep that you're going to use for, say, you know, the younger kid, and you're just basically waiting for them to age up, and you don't want to toss something just because, you know, your older child has grown out of it, and you've got a couple more, in my case, two more children below that are also going to use that thing. So it makes a ton of sense to hang on to things. Yeah, getting rid of everything as soon as you're done using it isn't something that is financially smart for us, and it's just nice to have it kind of on hand just in case you do need it. That being said, I feel like you can fall on a spectrum when it comes to being a minimalist. I do think that we are slightly more minimalists than you and Emily.
I would definitely agree with that.
I try to live a more Spartan existence, try to not allow myself to have the nice things.
Well, we do.
The luxuries.
I do like, and I've I've grown to stop shopping for these things, but I do kind of like quirky knickknacks. And so, you know, a little decorative thing here or there that kind of adds to the spice of the room. And your house is like white and black and gray, essentially. Your stuff is very like stark, very clean. And we like pops of color and bright stuff and crazy stuff. And so our house is paintings and all over the place, fake animal heads.
Yeah. We have very different tastes.
But also, on the other hand, we live in 1,300 square feet with one bathroom with the four of us. And so we do try to, on purpose, aim to live in a smaller space. We think it's good for us as a family, for our girls to share a room, for us to have a smaller space. There's less to clean. There's less to decorate. There's less to keep up with. And ultimately, we interact more. When you have a giant house, someone's in one wing of the house and, you know, another person's in the other, and you probably don't see each other nearly as much, and kids can lock themselves away in their rooms. But if they're kind of forced to interact with the family in this way, we just thought that was important. And that's an intentional choice on our part to live in 1,300 square feet and to share this space together. That's just something we feel is important for our family.
Cool. I didn't realize you guys were only living in 1,300 square feet. So Joel, and we've talked about this on a previous episode too, but the back part of your house you have set up as a rental.
Right.
Yeah, you've got it leased out year long long term rental, I should say, lease. But yeah, that's pretty awesome, man. I didn't realize you guys were rocking 1,300 up front.
Yeah. So the house overall is about 2,000 square feet. We rent out roughly the back 700 square feet to a friend. She's awesome. And my family, we live in the front half of the house, and so. Yeah, it works out perfectly for a lot of reasons. I mentioned that in the rental property podcast. But to try to live in a smaller space, there's like so many benefits that come from it. There's less furniture to buy. And I think too, like that's part of the American dream that people have bought into. It's like, and there's, people don't think about all the costs associated with a bigger house. Not only is there a bigger mortgage payment, not only do you have higher utility bills, but you also have more furniture that you need to buy for the space. And so just all these things start creeping up. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the best things that you can do from the get-go, spring cleaning your life, live in a smaller space. Living in that smaller space is going to ultimately make it a lot easier for you to take some of these steps that we're going to recommend here to you in this show, so that you can spring clean your life. Do the big thing. The big thing is to live in a smaller space.
Yeah, and having less possessions is one part of like minimalism that I kind of aspire towards. And hopefully by the end of this episode, you guys will have some tips, some pointers, and some sort of guidelines that maybe you can follow that will help you and ultimately encourage you guys to downsize, to get rid of some stuff. And honestly, dude, I think this is going to encourage me to get up in the attic and pull some stuff down.
I think my favorite feeling in doing this is getting rid of things that I use kind of sparingly or almost never that really don't add much value to my life. And it almost makes it easier then for me to find those things that do add value to my life that I forget. Mm-hmm. That I forget, like a book that I read a lot or I go back to as reference. You know, if I keep that on my nightstand, but I don't have four other books there to compete with it.
Yeah.
You know, if I have like this well-curated selection right there of things right. that I go to often, whatever it is in my life, if I make it easy to find those things that I use often and get rid of the things that I really don't need, it just kind of, everywhere I look at my house, I'm like, I like that. I need that. I use that. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like, what is all this stuff taking up space for on the counter?
Yeah. Yeah, it just brings focus to your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Truly enjoy the things that you have. And man, we're going to need it. We ought to do a full episode on that too, right? Like kind of quality over quantity sort of thing. I mean, that's our approach to beers, right? We're not sitting here crushing six Coors Lights. But I mean that does fit with us and sort of our sort of philosophy on what we like to talk about here and what we like to live. So yeah, Joel, I think that's a great rule of kind of focus on the things that you truly find enjoyment in and the things that you know you want to pursue and just kind of cut the rest. Go through your life and consider some of the things that aren't adding value to your life.
So on that note, let's talk about kind of the rules for how to figure out what you should get rid of.
Yes. One of those things, I think, Joel, is if it's still in a box from, say, when you moved into your house. Like if you have some stuff that you have not unpacked because you think, oh, we don't really need that now. Will you ever really need it? Let's be honest with yourself. If there's something that you have, whether it's in a closet or in an attic, and it's still in a box from a previous move, it's time to get rid of that.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I probably got a few things that hit that rule that I need to go home and get rid of. And not necessarily in a box, but I remember one of our friends gave us one of these baby carriers, like backpacks for hiking.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm always like, yeah, I can't wait to like take the girls hiking and put them in this awesome backpack baby carrier. And the girls are getting big and I've never used it. And so I just need to like pass the love on and give that to somebody that's going to use it.
On. So yeah, we've got, that's so funny that you got one of those. We were given one of those as well. And except we've used ours a couple times, not a ton, but we definitely have thrown Clover in there a couple times now and definitely Dottie.
But those are the kind of things too that unless you're an avid hiker, don't even get one because it's such a limited stage where you're going to use something like that. Be cognizant before you purchase something. Hey, is this a limited stage use item? If it is, and I'm actually really going to use it, try to buy it used, right? But just know, hey, unless I'm like super into this activity, it's really only, you know, 6 months to a year that I can actually use this item. So if I'm going to use it once or twice, is it worth the money?
Yeah, consider just borrowing it from a friend. A lot of folks we know that kind of do the things that we like to do, check in with them.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, I think that's such a good rule of thumb for so many things and something that our culture doesn't really lend itself to borrowing things from people. Like we all have a lawnmower and we all have a weed eater. And, you know, some of those things, you know, I use those things all the time, especially as a landlord. I'm cutting a lot of lawn. So right. I think it's okay to have my own. But there are a lot of things in life we should be a little more thoughtful about, you know, hey, do I need to purchase this baby carrier? Or my friend whose kid is a little bit bigger now, she's probably got one I could borrow for, you know, 6 months until my baby's grown out of it too. And, you know, there's a lot of importance to community in this and developing community where you can borrow things like that that you'll only need for a limited time.
So that works on stuff in boxes, right? Things, you know, things you have up in the attic. How do you approach clothes? Like, what do you think about, you know, say items that you have in your closet that maybe you hardly ever wear, like your tux? You mentioned that the other week.
Well, I wore it, didn't I?
I don't know. Did you? Was that
yes,
your tux?
That's what I wore. Come on.
I'm not looking you up and down, man. Sorry.
A tux is one of those rare
items.
Okay,
you didn't have the tie on. You didn't have your bow tie.
Right.
You had the jacket and the pants.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
So, no, that's something I'll get enough use out of. That's a really good point, though. You know, that's one of those things where it's a rare necessity. You don't really need a tux. And for me, it was just kind of more of a fun thing to wear that night just because I had it. Just kind of trying to get some use out of it. But my rule of thumb when it comes to clothing is that if I haven't worn it in the past year, that's when it's time to get rid of it. I can rationalize all day about how I'm going to wear it or like I really do like this article of clothing. But if you've gone through all four seasons and
you haven't worn it once,
it didn't go on your body, you don't need it.
It might be time to get rid of it. We talked about this in a recent episode too, how like in reality, there's like a uniform that we each have. And not like a actual like work uniform or anything like that, but like there's clothes that we wear. And I'm sure if you're listening to this too, you're the same way. There's a few items that you really, really like and you wear those all the time. And maybe instead you should just buy one more of those and get rid of like the 5 to 10 other articles of clothing that you have that you never wear. Or when you do wear, you're kind of like, this doesn't really fit me that well. I'll just kind of wear it because, you know, it's laundry day.
Yeah, I mean, I think over time too, when you figure out your style and exactly what you like to wear, you stop buying things that you're not into or things that you buy maybe just because it was on sale and right. You start to buy clothes that maybe are a touch nicer, but that last for a long, long time. And so now yes. I've got shirts that, yes. like the shirt I'm wearing right now, I will probably wear this like 100 times.
Is that Pendleton or Levi's? Levi's. Looks like a wool shirt.
Yeah, man. So like it's a nice shirt that costs a little bit more than most shirts cost, but I'm going to wear this shirt a lot and it's a staple. It's a go-to. So have fewer clothes and the clothes that you have, enjoy them more and get rid of the things, give them away or sell them the items that you haven't used, haven't worn in the last year.
Another category to consider getting rid of too, Joel, are electronics. With technology and the way things are advancing, like there's never a cool piece of old electronics that you're wanting to keep around because you think it's going to become useful. It's like, no, it's only getting less and less useful the longer you have it. And if you stuck it in the closet at some point to not use because you didn't need it, it's only going to become less and less useful. It's never going to like come around full circle where you're like, oh, finally, like, time to pull up the cassette player.
Now I can use that Motorola Razr again. I've been waiting for that. That old Nokia brick phone. Those things are so cool. Although I think those actually are coming back. They have like a newfangled smartphone version of
that. Do they really?
Yeah. But yeah, no, I completely agree. I think when I have gotten a new smartphone at times in the past, I've like held on to my old one thinking, you know what, I need a backup phone. But ultimately, that phone is more valuable today than it is any day in the future. And so what you should do instead of putting that phone in a drawer and holding it as a backup is you should sell it if you can. And if you can't sell it, it's a complete piece of trash that you need to recycle.
Yeah. That should be a very clear indicator as to the value. If you're trying to list something and you're like, well, I'm not going to be able to get anything for it. Cool. Sounds like it's something that you should get rid of too.
Yeah.
If no one else is willing to pay you for it, then just unload it.
So if you upgrade your phone, I think, or your computer or something like that, think about a couple things. Maybe either you can sell it on eBay or Craigslist or something like that, or on your neighborhood yard sale site. And if you can't do that, consider donating it. Consider donating it to a place like Best Buy. Best Buy's got one of the, I think, the biggest electronics recycling program in the nation. So take it to your Best Buy. If not, there's a great website called call2recycle.org. Call the number 2 recycle.org. Check that out. And there's lots of places you can find a place nearby you where you can donate your electronics. You can recycle those things. Because when you buy that new phone, your old phone is likely worth something. So sell it, get rid of it. There's also eco ATMs where you can go, and they're in lots of stores, Kroger, stuff like that. And that ATM will tell you exactly how much your phone is worth and will give you $25 or $30 or whatever. And it's better than nothing. And ultimately, when your phone dies, there's no way you're going to go back to the old technology. Like, I mean, that just sounds awful. If you're rocking an iPhone 8 now and you have to go back to your like iPhone 4S or whatever that is, I don't know.
Your SE like I've got.
Yeah, you're not going
to No one wants to do that.
No, nobody wants to do that. So sell it and bank that money towards, you know, another phone in the future, or recycle that thing.
Yeah, Joel. So those are some good spots to as far as where you can take some of your electronics. Now's a good time then to go ahead and segue into some of the other places where you can sell things that you have that you need to get rid of.
Yeah. And I think, like you've said, some of the stuff is junk. Like some of the stuff that you've got is probably trash. Like, yeah. And so as you're wading through your drawers, your miscellaneous drawer, whatever it is, like some of that stuff probably just belongs straight in the garbage. But let's talk about the valuable stuff, because, you know, some of it, you know, whether it's a table, a chair, a lawnmower that you haven't used in a long time, whatever it is, like that kind of stuff is actually going to sell and be valuable to other people. Some of it for actual use, some of it for parts, maybe even. But one of my favorite places, and I think probably the place that people sell the most stuff these days, is Facebook yard sale sites.
Yeah, you guys have been unloading a bunch of stuff on there recently, right?
Yeah, I sold a record player and a microwave recently on there. And Facebook yard sale is great because it is made up of your neighbors, essentially. I've joined different yard sale groups that reflect different communities that are, you know, right by me.
Yeah, they're like kind of neighborhood specific.
Yeah, and so you ultimately, I mean, you quickly know whether this person is a part of your neighborhood or not. And it makes the transaction feel a lot more friendly and less frightening than a potential...
Some of the other ones we'll talk about.
Yeah, than some of the other ones. So I like the Facebook yard sale groups. And by the way, that is different than the Facebook marketplace. So be a little careful if you're looking at the Facebook marketplace, and there's actually like a little icon on the Facebook app for that. That I've seen more scams on the Facebook marketplace site, and people like selling stuff that looks kind of fake, or like a really nice iPhone for like $100.
Yeah,
you know, all these kind of...
It's a little more scammy for sure.
Yeah. So the actual yard sale sites, find one in your community, join that, and that's going to be a good place to sell some of the stuff to people that live close to you. It's going to make the transaction easier and just a lot more above board.
Yeah. And those are the specific Facebook yard sale groups that you want to look at. So look for the groups.
I guess the biggest downside to using Facebook yard sale is that you're really only hitting thousands of people, maybe even only hundreds of people, depending on where you live, as opposed to listing something on eBay, which we can talk about next. You're reaching a limited segment of people, but it works especially well for larger items.
Yeah, like furniture and things like that you definitely don't want to have to worry about shipping.
Exactly. So it's like positives and negatives. Know that, you know, bigger stuff, stuff that's harder to sell, stuff that's harder to ship. You know, Facebook yard sale sites work great for stuff like that, but you're reaching a more limited audience.
Yeah. But one of the advantages to that, though, are that you probably already have a Facebook account. It's not like you need to go on to, say, eBay and create a brand new profile. pretty much everyone is already on Facebook. It's just whether or not they're in that group, and it just makes it really easy to hop on there and start selling the things that you want to get rid of.
Yeah, the barrier to entry is nil, pretty much. And creating the actual post, especially if you have the Facebook app on your smartphone, takes literally like a minute. It's really easy to take the pictures with your phone, upload them, create the listing, and be done with it and wait for people to contact you.
So I think these Facebook groups are a vast improvement upon Craigslist, which is, you know, kind of like maybe more the traditional route that people have taken when they've, you know, wanted to sell stuff. We actually sold our car.
Well, traditional for the last 15 years, maybe, because before that you were like listing stuff in newspapers.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and the actual classifieds. Yeah, so more and more I feel like Craigslist is sort of getting kind of phased out. I feel like there's less stuff on there that I'm looking for. I'll still go on there if I'm looking at getting something new before I purchase something new. I'll still look on eBay and, you know, and Craigslist for sure. Just partly too because it's local. So to be able to go there immediately potentially and get what it is that I'm looking for, to get it secondhand instead of brand new, that's something I'm always going to do.
Yeah, I think Craigslist is really good for a few things and not great at a lot of things. What Craigslist is particularly good for, if you're looking to get a good deal on an automobile, a used car, a motorhome, let's say, if you are looking to buy a bicycle or something like that, it's a mm-hmm. specific kind, you're able to search by keyword. Even like specialty furniture can be really good there.
That's right. All the keywords.
Yeah, a lot of people list that. And so it's easier to search by keyword. So if I'm looking for Danish modern furniture. Yeah,
mid-century modern MCM.
Yeah, I'll find a good selection on Craigslist. And there, again, Facebook's great for this too. There are specific sites, but there's such a wide variety on Craigslist that I think for items like that, it's great. Facebook, you might stumble across that, right? Somebody might be posting it randomly, but Craigslist, it's super searchable and super easy to find.
And just broad too. I mean, typically you're searching in either an entire city or an entire region.
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest pains that comes along with that though, is you might have to drive 45 minutes or an hour to pick up the bed. I mean, I always keep my parameters really close and I'm not willing to travel very far unless I'm like searching for something even bigger, like a car. Mm-hmm. If I was buying a car, I would be willing to open up my parameters. I'd probably be willing to drive an hour to buy the right car.
Certainly.
But if I'm, you know, talking about a $200 chair or whatever, $100 chair, I'm not going to drive an hour to pick that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to sell a good bit of like my old photography gear on Craigslist, but then, man, I just got sick of it because you'd meet up with somebody and then with, you know, with the gear, they kind of want to try it out. And so you're kind of sitting there while they're like playing with your camera and just kind of sucks.
Kind of a weird feeling.
Yeah, it's just weird. And then they're like, a lot of times they don't know what they're doing. And so they're kind of like trying to figure out how to use it. I'm just like, oh, dude, I'm not here to like teach you how to use the camera. To me, that was one of the downsides, I guess, to selling some of that stuff on Craigslist.
Yeah. And one of the biggest downsides to Craigslist on top of that is potential theft. Potential robbery.
Yeah. What if like somebody could have just like run off with my camera?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I can run far, but I'm not like really fast. So
the biggest tip is if you're actually going to do a transaction, if you're going to list something on Craigslist, if you're going to buy something on Craigslist, make sure you meet that person in a well-lit public area and preferably at your local police station, because police stations are totally cool with that now, especially because of all the crimes that they've had to chase down, all the perps they've had to lock away because of Craigslist crimes. They're all about you meeting in their parking lot mm-hmm. and doing the transaction there.
Or if you can't do that, just bring along a buddy.
Yep, that helps too.
So then let's talk about eBay, because instead of selling all my kind of camera gear on Craigslist, I started putting it all up on eBay, which is great because there's, you know, people all across the country and even the world, but I don't do international shipping because it starts getting kind of, I don't know.
Expensivo.
Yeah, it's expensive, and I just don't like messing with that, man. I say no international shipping. So.
Ship it. Arriba.
So I'll do domestic, but for items that are more specialty, and so for instance, some of the camera bodies I'm selling or lenses, folks that are looking for those know exactly what they're looking for. They're not just like happen to stumble upon a nice, you know, nice lens or a nice camera body that, oh, yeah, let me drop $1,000 on this. No, it's probably not going to happen. There's a much better marketplace and a much better environment for that to occur on eBay. You know, when you can have all the stats up there, you can kind of have, you can link to reviews and what other folks have to say about them. eBay is my go-to site for these items that are more expensive that folks are looking for, and they're smaller, so I can ship it and then just be done with it. Do you have an eBay account, Joel?
Mm-hmm. So I got a deal on something around Christmas time. Black Friday deal.
Uh-huh.
So essentially, I bought a phone, and it came with free Bluetooth headphones.
Nice.
And but then another deal came up on a phone that was even better. So I got a new phone that was my phone that I've got now. It was $120, brand new. It's a really nice phone. So I saw that after the fact, uh-huh. and I was like, crap, that one's even cheaper and a little bit better. And so what I did, the first phone came in that I bought before I found this secondary deal, and I relisted it on eBay.
Nice.
And I kept the headphones, listed the cell phone.
Just the phone.
And I made money.
Nice. So basically, you made money and you got some free headphones.
Got some free headphones. So nice. Yeah, I don't use eBay a whole lot because there's not usually high-end stuff that I'm selling very often. But if I was, that's the perfect marketplace for it. And interestingly enough, too, depending on what kind of clothes you're selling, that can become a great marketplace for selling used clothing.
Like nicer clothes?
Yeah. Yeah, like nicer, specialty, vintage, whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a huge market for clothing on eBay if you know how to list it and you know what you've got.
Yeah, there's folks that do entire businesses on eBay. They've got like their eBay stores and they kind of specialize in clothes only.
Yeah, so eventually I want to have my friend Josh on the podcast mm-hmm. who had a vintage clothing store on eBay.
Well, that's what he did?
Yeah.
Like full time?
Yeah, so his job was hit up the thrift stores and buy clothing by the pound, and he just had an eye for the stuff. He knew it would sell and then flip it on eBay.
Is this furniture Josh?
And so
from
now,
down in Florida? Okay.
Yeah. And so now he flips mid-century modern furniture. So he's got another business that he started basically buying one man's junk and turning it into somebody else's treasure. Mm-hmm. So I love that idea behind a business. So I'd love to talk to him since he's done two of these kind of businesses.
Cool.
I'd love to have him on the show, kind of help people learn from some of the lessons he's learned and how he's been successful doing it.
So then if you don't have a bunch of like high dollar items, this sounds like what you need to do is a yard sale.
Yeah, old school.
Or a garage sale, depending on where... What do you call it? You call it garage sale or yard sale?
Yard sale.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like, isn't it a regional thing? They say that like if you call it a yard sale, you're from this part of the United States. If you call it a garage sale, you're from here.
Probably. I could see that.
Rummage sale, I think, is another one.
All right. I like that too.
You like rummage sale?
Yeah, that's nice. I like yard sale though, I think. And I like that idea. And by the way, if you are going to do one, posting Craigslist and let people know what's happening. That helps like bring people out. So just say, hey, upcoming yard sale, here's the address and kind of here's a few of the things that I've got that I'll be selling that day. And then do the same thing. Post a few signs around your neighborhood, letting people know that it's happening and telling them, you know, here's a few pieces that we'll have. But an old school Saturday yard sale, you know, from 10 to 4 or 9 to 6 or whatever, that's going to go a long way in helping you kind of clear out some of your clutter.
9 to 6, dude. What kind of long freaking yard sale are you?
I don't know.
are you running 9 to 6?
I know.
No way. I'm out of there, man.
I have a work ethic that, like none other.
That'd be like the longest yard sale in like history of yard sales.
I yard sale till I drop. No, some people do 2 days, man. They spread it out over Saturdays and Sundays.
Man, no. If it's still there at like 1:30, I'm like, all right, everything's on the curb. Curb alert.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
You're just slashing the prices on everything.
Yeah, like what do you want? Give me like $1. It's yours.
Yeah. But an old school yard sale is kind of the best way to get rid of stuff that doesn't really have. It's just kind of stuff you want to clear out and make a few bucks for and hopefully find some life with somebody else. Consider that. Right after that, the next thing to do, donate it.
Yeah, if you can't sell to the yard sale, donate it.
Yep. And so maybe you have the yard sale first and you think I can make $50, $100 today by selling some of my old stuff. If it doesn't work out or, you know, you're only able to sell a few items, that means that stuff is probably worth next to nothing. And so that stuff, just donate it, get your tax receipt, write it off on your taxes, or I guess with a new tax law, you're probably not writing it off, but get rid of it.
How give you it think to, about that?
Yeah, you know? Give it somewhere though that's going to have a good home. That is better than holding on to it.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. So you're the photographer. You're great at listing things and making them look extra special.
Yeah, man. The picture. I feel like that is so important. Obviously, I'm biased, but you can do so much with a good picture to make your listing look good.
Yeah, and I see so many listings where I'm like, I might be interested in that item, but I can't tell. The picture is so bad. And when the picture is not clear or not well lit, I just move on.
Yeah. Folks definitely aren't going to be nearly as drawn to your listing if you've just got this kind of crummy, dusty looking photo. But that's actually a way to get a potential deal. this dining room set that we're sitting at. We got up in about 45 minutes from where we were, because Kate kept watching it and it kept sitting there on Craigslist with this, literally, like in the photo, the flash went off and you can see just like dust kind of like in the air, and like you can't even see the other end of the table. And she's just like, I'm pretty sure this is a sweet, sweet table. And she kept watching it, and they just kept dropping the price because nobody was coming to look at it. So if you're in the market, look out for those kind of listings, because you might be able to get a deal. But, you know, we're talking about selling, and folks are going to be more apt to come purchase something from you if your home's kind of bright and clean looking versus like dark and dingy.
Yeah. And on that note, take 30 seconds to clean up your item. You know, wipe it down. Make sure it's got that kind of gleam, that new look gleam. Yeah,
have it look fresh.
Yeah. You don't want to, whether it's a bike you're selling or a table or a chair, wipe it down. Make sure everything looks good as new. I swear people just don't take the time to wipe something down. And that can be the difference between selling an item or not.
Did you clean your microwave that you sold? You said you sold a microwave?
Heck yeah. Heck yeah, man. You got to clean the inside and take a picture of it to show people like, hey, this isn't like some nastified like...
microwave with like spaghetti splattered all up on the roof of it.
Yeah, exactly. like fish guts all over the place or something like that.
Joel's Norwegian, so he microwaves his fish.
All the time.
And it's just all over the inside of his normal microwave, but not the one he sells.
And I wear halibut cologne, so that's what I'm into.
And also with the photos, the more expensive the item, consider taking more photos, right? When Kate and I listed our Volkswagen, we had a Volkswagen Passat wagon that we actually sold on Craigslist. And when we sold that thing, I took a lot of photos because if someone's going to drop a few thousand dollars on it, they want to be able to see every sort of blemish or, you know, anywhere where there's a scratch. I took a picture of it because that's the kind of thing that they're definitely going to see when they show up and look at it. So you may as well kind of go ahead and get that out there. Obviously, we shined it up and made sure the car looked as best as it possibly could. But like, again, you're talking about like your microwave oven. You only need to post like one or two photos of that, you know?
Two pictures, probably outside, inside.
Done.
Right?
Someone's going to come pick it up, $20, $30, done deal.
A couch, probably four pictures.
Yeah.
And Matt's saying take good pictures. You don't need a fancy camera. You probably just need your average smartphone. At this point, most smartphones have pretty good cameras. Just hold it steady. Make sure you're getting a shot of the entire item and make sure the room is well lit. And if you do those things, you're going to take a picture that's better than 85% of the pictures out there.
Yeah, if you think about it at all, it'll be better than 85% of the pictures
out there. Yeah, but it's like really important if you want top dollar or even just to sell your item.
Take
enough pictures of that item and make sure they're decent shots.
Yeah. So when you're taking photos too, do consider the background, right? So if you've got a microwave, it should probably belong on your kitchen counter. Like that's a great place to take a picture of your microwave or like your dining room table or something like that. Don't put it like on the floor in the corner somewhere.
Or put it on your couch and take a picture of it. That's weird. Yeah. People are like, it's out of context, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Context is important. Nothing should ever be photographed in your bathroom, like on the toilet. Like that would be weird. Like why is that sitting on the back of the toilet? That's bizarre.
If you're taking pictures of your car, take it to like an empty parking lot, maybe something like that. Or if your house looks decent on the outside, take pictures in front of your house maybe. But just make sure that it's in context and that you're taking these like good, clear pictures.
Yeah. Something else to do is to price compare. Even if you're going to post on Craigslist, say we're talking about the car, look around on some other sites that deal specifically with cars and make sure you know what your car can go for. Obviously, you're going to want to look on like Kelley Blue Book and sites like that for a vehicle. But say, like we were talking earlier about a camera, I'm going to get on eBay and see what cameras like that are going for. That way, when I do decide to list it, say even locally on Craigslist or on eBay, I know where to price it. Obviously, eBay's got different mechanisms built in where they say, oh, something like this goes for this range and this kind of condition. But you just want to do a little bit of research. Obviously, you're going to do more of that with a more expensive item, but take that into account.
Yeah. Be realistic about the price you're asking for, especially if you want to move it quickly. If you're serious about decluttering and you're listing a bunch of items, don't ask too much, because if you start listing your stuff and overpricing it, there's just more work involved. There's lowering the price eventually, relisting it, whatever you got to do. And that just becomes a pain. So if you're just really trying to declutter your life and get rid of a bunch of stuff, if you're trying to spring clean your life, make sure you ask a reasonable price and negotiate with people. Let them ask for, you know, 10 bucks off, whatever it may be, and be willing to work with people so that you can get this stuff out of your life. Because ultimately, that's what you want. I don't think I've ever talked to someone who just got rid of a bunch of stuff and they're like, I miss all of it. I just miss all those things I just sold and I'm so bummed and my life sucks now. It's so therapeutic to get rid of these things. And especially if you're able to make a few dollars, it feels really good. You will not miss the things that you sell. Your mind will be freer. You will have decluttered your life in a good way, and you're not going to miss it.
All right, Joel, back to the beer.
Cascade Blueberry.
So looks like you don't like your beer because you still have a bunch left, and mine is totally gone because I love it.
No, I'm a huge fan. I'm just not a lush.
This beer, one of my all-time favorites. I'm going to, like, literally, this is probably one of my top five beers that I've ever had. I've had it before. I've had it maybe two or three other times. But every time I have it, it just sort of maintains its place in my mind. You know, it sort of sits there at the top.
It's like on your Mount Rushmore of beers.
Oh, easily.
This is really, really good. And I don't remember if I've had this before with you or not, but...
We have. I remember specifically having it at the beach. I don't know if it was last year or a couple years ago, but we had this. Don't ask me why I know it, but I know it. Trust me.
And again, our wives are like, how do you remember the beer you drank together 2 years ago and you don't remember what I told you to do last night? Yeah, I know. That's a problem. But yes, yeah, this beer is delicious. I'm a huge fan. Cascade Brewing Blueberry Ale, you know, aged for a year on blueberries in oak. It's really, really delicious. And if you're into a little bit of that mouth-puckering sour with blueberries, it's really, really, really good.
Perfectly balanced, though, at the same time. It's got that tartness, but it's got just enough sweetness in there, I think. And that barrel-aged oakness is in there as well. And so it all kind of mellows out. I think this is just like right in the middle of like the Venn diagram of awesome sour beers, man. It's got it all.
So thanks everyone for listening. Our home on the web is howtomoney.com. We'll have show notes up there for this episode. And if you like what you hear, let us know.
Yeah. Thanks guys for listening. We really appreciate it. And until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.